A lifetime of hard work. Children laughing in the kitchen. Family photos on a restaurant wall. A legacy that lives on. It all comes from the power of a conversation. Like the one Tommy Hall had with First Horizon Bank about taking over his father's Charleston-based restaurant business. Now the table is set for a whole new generation. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Tommy. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
In the South, it's always college football season. And the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Everything that man just said is true. Hour two, Chuck Oliver Show on a Monday. 9 states and 60 sticks. Been doing it for a decade. I appreciate the blessing, folks. I mean that. Our next guest, I was going to say he's an OG. No, he's the OG. Way back in your rear view, when you first flickered on the ACC network, there's a chance the very first person you saw and heard was our next guest. Want to welcome from the ACC network, and you've known him, radio, TV, especially in North Carolina, going back decades, it's Mark Packer. Mark, welcome back, friend. How you been?
Good, Chuck. I hope life's treating you well.
Yeah, nothing but. Let's talk ACC, and I want to ask you about Florida State and Mike Norvell. And if you want to start with, well, it's Florida State and they got a lot of money. And I'm not trying to be funny. Those are good places to start. But why is his way working in Tallahassee? Because it's not just working. Like, they're ACC champs and undefeated seasons and et cetera, et cetera. Like, why is it working to that degree?
Well, he's done a brilliant job in the transfer portal. And, you know, the hand that he was dealt when he walked in there, quite frankly, he had to take some steps backwards just to kind of clean out and find out, hey, who really wants to be here? But he's done a great job. He and his staff have done a great job in the transfer portal. And, in fact, when you go back and look, Chuck, they've hit not just guys who have filled spots. They've hit home runs. In fact, I was just watching the end of the NFL draft over the weekend, had 10 guys drafted. 9 of them were transfer guys. So, you know, it's one thing to develop players, but I think he's doing a pretty good job at that department. But he and his staff have identified exactly what they needed to fill holes and then become stars. And he has done as good a job in that department, I think, as any coach in the country over the last couple of years.
It's Mark Packer. He's on Twitter. He's on Instagram. He's on TikTok, Mark Packer. Find him. He has the best information you're going to find in the ACC. All right, let's move up to Clemson because it hasn't been working as well. And that's just kind of it. I look at almost every unit on that team, and everybody seems just a little bit less to me. But just give me your assessment of where Dabo, where that program, because 9 and 10 wins a year, that's pretty high cotton, but it's not where Clemson had been.
Well, I mean, let's be honest, too. Last year, they didn't get to double-digit wins for the first time in, what, 12 years? You can go back to the history of college football, and I think Alabama, Florida State, and Clemson are the ones that have been that consistent level over a duration of time. So last year, listen, the quarterback play the last couple of years has been average at best, I think, and that's with DJU and Cade Klubnik, and that'll be a million-dollar question. Moving forward this year, they put 6 guys in the draft that graduate all their kids. They're still a top 15 team, but we're used to seeing them in that conversation. And if they get decent quarterback play this fall, they'll be back in that conversation again. But that's what's been missing. And again, you go from Deshaun Watson to Trevor Lawrence to average quarterback play, you're going to see a drop. I don't care how good you've recruited, and they've done a great job in that department. They don't bother with the transfer portal. Which may be some folks screaming and hollering about, hey, he needs to do that. But he's had pretty good success despite all that stuff. And he's running his kind of program. So I suspect the Tigers will be a top 15 team again. And if they get really good quarterback play, they could be a team you could certainly see win an ACC championship. And even if they don't, they could still be a team that I think will be in the conversation piece as far as the college football playoff now that we expand to 12 teams.
ACC guru, it is Mark Packer from the ACC Network. Okay, be transparent with me here. Do you feel the need before you criticize Mac Brown to preface it with, look, I love Mac Brown. I feel like, honestly, I'm taking a shot at somebody we all love, but There should have been more winning. He's been the head coach for five seasons in Chapel Hill. He's had a Sunday quarterback every single one of those games, and yeah, it's just been good.
They haven't closed, Chuck. You know, they've gotten off to – last 2 years in particular, they've gotten off to great starts and were in a position to finally achieve what North Carolina football fans have been waiting for 40 years. And for whatever reason, their defense has not been very good. You know, they have had really good quarterback play, but, man, their defense couldn't tackle me or you. And at some point in time, when you play really good teams, or you get to November when every game really does get amped up and you got to go make some plays, I don't care who's under quarterback, at some point in time, you got to tackle the man with the ball. And defensively, Mac has failed in that department. Of course, they make a change this upcoming year with Jeff Collins, the former Georgia Tech quarterback, of course, head coach, now becoming the quarterback of their defense. So that's got to get better. But they've had good offensive teams. They've been fun to watch, and they've been good. They just haven't gotten to where they want to be, and that is, hey, we want to win the ACC championship and get into the college football playoff. Max, like you said, legendary coach, great with the media, with all that stuff. I mean, he has given North Carolina a boost of energy in Mac 2.0. But, hey, they have not won an ACC football championship since 1980. And, Chuck, you know this as well as anybody. They've had a lot of good players. So you go back to the history of the NFL draft, and North Carolina is one of those schools you kind of go, son of a gun, man, they've had a lot of guys get to the next level. But defensively, they simply have not been good enough the last couple of years.
A few more minutes, Mark Packer from ACC Network. I know I have to ask you about off-field legal stuff, but I'm trying to put it off. Maybe we'll run out of time. Georgia Tech and Virginia Tech. If you would have asked me, I'll say a year and a half ago, I'd have thought both programs were just adrift. Somehow I kind of like both guys found some steadiness. They kind of righted themselves or at least stopped bleeding. Like I kind of like where both programs are right now. Tell me what you think, though, because you see them up close.
Yeah, I totally agree on both fronts. You know, Key has done an incredible job because he really, number one, had an incredibly difficult schedule, inherited a mess, has kind of found his guy with Haynes King, who looks like he's going to be a player. They won a lot more games, including a bowl game last year, which I did not did what I expected them to do. So, yeah, they're heading in the right direction. Their schedule is still brutal. And Virginia Tech, to me, is the sleeper upcoming for the upcoming year in the ACC. NC State and Virginia Tech are the two teams. Number one, I think they're going to be pretty good. Number two, they have quarterbacks. And number three, the schedule works out. So all that kind of plays into the mix that, hey, if you can stay relatively healthy and the ball bounces right. But I'm with you on new tech and old tech. I think that both fan bases are cautiously optimistic. I think Virginia Tech's a little further ahead than Georgia Tech. But, I got huge expectations for the Hokies in the upcoming season.
All right. I want to ask you about just one thing, and you can give me your opinion on this, or I may have just ambushed you, but Georgia Tech and Georgia play it. You mentioned the schedule. There was a time when Tulane and LSU were in the same conference, and then they weren't in the same conference, and they played most years. And then they just kind of stopped playing, and for the most part, they haven't played regularly in probably 40 years, and that's probably all that's done to save Tulane about 40 losses. Despite what would happen in the immediate interim, like, is there's no real scenario where Georgia Tech ever catches up to Georgia and this turns into a year-by-year rivalry. Like, they're going to be on the business end of this thing forever. Agree or disagree? Because I'm talking about how you get out of it and just notify Georgia, we ain't playing you anymore.
Well, I mean, I think, number one, the state would go crazy if they didn't play. That's number one. I mean, you know how politics comes into play with all that stuff. Kirby's done an incredible job at Georgia, and that's not going to stop anytime soon. And Georgia Tech's got a lot of catching up to do from that perspective. But, hey, they're going to play the game. Whether or not you want to watch it or you want to bet on it or you want to comment on it, that's up to you, and that's going to be up to Georgia Tech to become more competitive. But they're going to play that game. I think that's going to hold true for Kentucky, Louisville, Clemson, South Carolina, Florida, Florida State. Those games are going to need to be played. Again, where we go in the future of college football and this new expansion, and who knows what's going to happen with Florida State and Clemson from a legal perspective. We'll see how that all plays itself out. But they're going to play, Chuck. But it's going to be up to Georgia Tech to become more competitive. There's no question, because Georgia is not going to put it in reverse, I promise you.
All right, last thing for you. We got to go off field. Jim Phillips, I don't know him, and maybe you do know him personally. He seems like a, by and large, pretty decent guy. He got dropped into a wood chipper. He's got state attorneys general going after his conference. How do you think all that? Because I still think that the ironclad agreement, it's ironclad for a reason. But there is so much public discourse right now about this that the ACC, I mean, they're just taking reputational body blows on this. Get inside Jim Phillips' mind and everybody else in Charlotte and tell me what's going on.
Well, first of all, he's a great guy. He's old school educator from that perspective. And a lot of folks are like, well, he needs to get in the modern times. Hey, he has a standard in which he believes. He wouldn't have taken this job and what this league represents if he didn't believe in that. There is no doubt, I've said this before, when you start getting into a situation where Florida State and Clemson have now made it public, and this is going to be a long, tedious, expensive proposition. I think this is a lose-lose proposition for everybody, for the league, for Florida State, and for Clemson. And I hate to say that. I mean, I got a front row seat trying to cover all this stuff, and you try to be transparent for the good and the bad. But when you get everybody barking like they have, I don't know how this can end amicably. And I don't care if they reach an agreement. I don't care if this thing goes another 5 years and we're still no man's land. It doesn't look good. It doesn't feel good. And I know Florida State wants to make more money. Clemson wants to make more money. Everybody wants to make more money. I get it. But I don't know when it reaches this point how it can end where everybody walks away thinking, hey, we got a pretty good deal here. I just don't know how that works. I really don't.
Folks, when it comes to the ACC, he knows what it is. I appreciate your time, Mark. Thank you.
Chuck, always a pleasure. Take care.
Yes, sir. Mark Packer from ACC Network. So that's just what it is. I've told you. This was obvious way, 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 way back. It was celebrated back, I want to say, in 2015 when they signed this. I think that's correct, or 16. It was celebrated, pause, in part by Florida State administrators, that this agreement was ironclad. No more of those ne'er-do-wells like you'll find in College Park, Maryland. Because we have an ironclad agreement and we're all locked together. Because we love the ACC. Well, Florida State, not so much. That's what, in, when you said that in 2015, it either was true then, or you wanted it to be true enough, or you wanted to put forth that it was true so that we wouldn't be scalped like, you know, the Big 12 is about to be scalped by the Pac-12. Big 12 may not even last. Oops. That was how uncertain we were. Because go back to the – I've said this before. Do not lose sight of, like, Swofford and them in Greensboro at the time. This agreement – and then leadership all over the conference. This was their response to Maryland leaving. They just wanted to send a message. Like they wanted to kill an ant with a sledgehammer. Uh-huh. Anybody else? Uh-uh. Because the ACC, we're all together. And so it wasn't about actually keeping anyone out. It was about showing Maryland and everybody else how angry you were. Just weird. And now Florida State in North Carolina and the, was it Sensational 7, Magnificent 7, really groovy 7, by and large above average 7, whatever it was, those 7, they all look at it now and go, nah, we don't remember that meeting. So they just have decided to be as public and ugly and loud as possible. And I've told you, but that's bad for the HOA. It really is. You've got the owners of the most expensive houses complaining about the neighborhood and letting the grass grow and all that. So parking on the street, it's just terrible. Clothesline in the front yard, my goodness. All right, we're going to take a break. Come back, more next.
Always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the King of College Football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
It's Monday on Chuck Oliver Show. I told you we had spring games over the weekend. Yeah. We also had the transfer portal going on. And I mentioned Dominic Williams. He's the big kid who was all conference as a freshman at TCU. Big defensive lineman who's not like a 260 edge guy. He's 300 pounds. So that means you play inside. True freshman who can be all conference in a real conference, and his team was great? Yeah, I like that. And then last season, he was co-defensive player of the year in the Big 12. And I told you, Brian Kelly got on the mic and cut a WWE promo and told every D-tackle in America, I want you, I'm coming for you. The next day, I was like, note to self, set a timer, check the portal tomorrow morning. And all these folks started announcing. There were like four tackles. Now, there was, 100 to everybody. But I wanted to assign a connection to it. And whether there was or not, I was like, is this tampering? When you have a guy who's a head coach at a place like LSU, and I'm all wondering, why didn't my guy do it? I've already said, man, if it's working in the portal, why isn't my guy doing it? But you have a LSU, he's like, we only have one position. It's day tackle. Next day, I'd like to get in the portal, please. Yeah, my name's Dominic Williams. So he visited this, that, and the other place over the weekend, maybe Oklahoma, maybe Missouri. Doesn't matter. I think he's going to go to LSU. That's my opinion, by the way. I think he's going to go to LSU. But he begins that visit today. And I'd mentioned that earlier in the program, a, quote, multi-day visit. He will be on campus. I said Oklahoma. It was Missouri and Texas. OU, quote, would like to be in the picture. But in fact, Oklahoma's trying that end run. What's the end run when you want one recruit? You know what the end run is. You offer his teammate or his relative. Dominic Williams has a younger brother. This is the Oklahoma thing. He had visited Texas. Oklahoma extended an offer to Dominic Williams' younger brother, who's in the class 3 years from now. He may be a bigger player than Dominic Williams. I don't know that, though. The older Williams defensive lineman, because this kid's an edge rusher. The older, the one who's actually in college and has started a bunch of games and sacked the quarterback from the defensive tackle position. That guy is on campus in Baton Rouge and apparently is going to stay there for a few days. And he may commit this week, he says. That's, in fact, his words is he would like to get it done this week. I think he's going to LSU. Missouri's wonderful. Texas couldn't be better. Steve Sarkisian is talking about, I just sent two tackles to the NFL, all of that. It's the most effective pitch you can have. And so that's formidable. Believe me. Brian Kelly, it's at a pure, we need somebody to play snaps right now, week one. Not even the guys. Now, Steve Sarkisian, I'm sure, well, we had guys in the spring, and so you're going to come in and you're going to have full chance to compete. Brian Kelly's like, I need starters. So Dominic Williams will be a nice haul there. What up, Heath?
So NFL draft this weekend, obviously, it was a pretty big thing for everybody in college football, seeing where your kids are going, who's going to have to try and make it as a free agent. Some free agents, by the way, do better than others. If you saw this, Chuck, Sam Hartman goes to Washington, gets a $20,000 signing bonus and a guarantee of $250,000 salary for the coming year from a team that had just drafted a quarterback number two. Like, they just want him to be on the sidelines and be handsome. That's pretty much why Sam Hartman is
there.
They
make that up in marketing.
Yep. They're just going to send him out around town to try and help sell tickets. You need a player to show up somewhere and just have everybody in the room saying, what a handsome man. Sam Hartman is your guy. One guy that we discussed last week that fell farther than expected was Spencer Rattler. He had six quarterbacks drafted in the first 12 picks of the draft, and then nobody goes until Rattler in the fifth round. And I don't know if you saw the clip or not, Chuck, but Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network said, and I'm quoting here, talking about that QB1 show that he had done back when he was in high school. Quote, it did not make him look great, and it is unbelievable how many different teams mentioned to me the image of him in that show and how they can't get it out of their heads. So Sam Hartman is like the good image. What a handsome man. We can't get him out of our heads. Spencer Rattler, the way that he was portrayed in that high school QB1 show, is the opposite of that. And the idea that Ian Rappaport basically is saying, with everything Rattler's done since high school, with 2 years in the SEC at South Carolina, no one in Columbia will say a bad word about him. Mm-hmm. And that is not a no one will say a bad word about him on camera at a podium where it turns into an issue.
Yeah, that ain't Aaron Hernandez.
That's not the deal. Behind the scenes, no one will say a bad word about Spencer Rattler and how he conducted himself at South Carolina. The idea, I mean, I thought he handled the Caleb Williams situation fine.
He did.
I mean, someone
he
took
did.
The job. I mean, it was understandable he transferred, but he didn't burn any bridges on his way out of Norman. The idea that kid fell to the fifth round because some people can't process the idea that just maybe a dude might be a little different 5 years after that reality show, and also that the reality show might not give you the cleanest, purest portrayal of who someone is, any reality show anywhere. The idea that actually is part of why he fell in the draft is just really sad to me because, look, he came off as a jerk in the show. There's no debating that. But there's enough evidence here. The idea that you're going to hold a 17 or 18-year-old kid to their worst moments forever and ever when it's not a criminal thing. I mean, it's one thing if somebody went out and physically harmed somebody. He was a jerk. And no doubt. It made him come off as a jerk. And he's had a whole lot of things in his career to humble him and seems to have learned from it. I just think that's a shame, but apparently that's what happened.
I would drop in the fishbowl. Like, I would compartmentalize this to just the day he realized, I'm leaving Norman, Oklahoma. Like, how he handled and responded to all of that. Then there's the on-field stuff, like the actual follow-through, because it's very, very difficult, especially for a college kid. When you're a 31-year-old NFL veteran, like, you're a grown man, and you've taken all kinds of shots, on the field, off the field, whatever. When you're a college kid, your girlfriend's angry at you, you have a test on Monday, like, there's all kinds of things that can throw you off. Well, the offensive line, they don't block for me. Then there's that. I couldn't be more impressed with how that kid responded. And like I said, I'll just drop it in the fishbowl of the past 2 years. The details of his exit, we were just talking about how some kids go on Twitter on the way out and just burn down the town. That is not how Spencer handled it. So I would think it would be very short-sighted for an NFL personnel person to operate that way.
Marketing is everywhere. From the billboards on the highways to the notifications on your phone, we are constantly bombarded with people trying to sell us stuff. What makes good marketing? Are you doing enough in your life personally and professionally to market yourself? You have questions and the Marketing Mad Men have answers. Search the Marketing Mad Men on Google or your favorite podcast provider to get practical marketing advice from expert guests who are shaping and reshaping the business world. They say marketing is a madman's game. Join the Marketing Mad Men every Saturday at 4 p.m. to find out why.
This morning in North Carolina, wheels are spinning. Determination is winning. A passion is now a thriving business, and it shows no signs of slowing down. How? The power of a conversation. Like the one Clint Spiegel had with First Horizon Bank about starting a bike wheel manufacturing facility in Asheville. Now it's not just talk, it's rubber meets road. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Clint. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Do the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
So, Will Muschamp's time as head coach of Florida Gators, it did not go so super-duper overall. He's about 500. He's 17-15, about 500 in the conference. He's 28-21, so they scheduled a little bit better and scheduled some dubs outside the conference, but it just wasn't good. And the 2014 season in particular was a microcosm. He got fired that year at the end of it, and that year they had, folks, a game they won at Neyland Stadium. Having to watch the Gators offense, it was almost like punishment. So, end of the year, they're like, all right, you're fired. 4 months later, they had 2 first-round picks and 2 third-round picks, 4th-round picks. 4 of those kids were linemen. And they weren't winning games. It's Florida. Like, sometimes you can say those, like, 2 words and it shows you everything. It's Florida. they always are going to have ball players. They have one kid drafted over the weekend. Ricky Pearsall, he surprised most, I will say, surprised most by being a first-round pick. I thought he'd be one of the first receivers off the board in the second or third round even, but he was a first-round pick, and good for him. He was the only Gator drafted, so that's just an anomaly. It was a weird year, but the program ain't in the best shape ever either. So a lot to talk about from Gator country. Let's bring on our friend Andrew Spivey. Andrew, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, Chuck, and my, how the times have fallen with one Gator picked. I mean, wow.
Yeah, tell me about Ricky Pearsall, because I thought he would – I like the guy. And in 2 years, he showed up and didn't have always, you know, super great quarterback play, but – he did his part, worked his way into the first round. Tell me what you were thinking he would get as far as a draft slot.
Yeah, I mean, heading into the Senior Bowl and stuff, I thought, okay, he's a late second, early third. Then watched him in the Senior Bowl, had a really, really good Senior Bowl, yep. Had a really good, you know, combine. Didn't do anything at his pro day, and I thought, okay, he's probably an early second-round pick, like you said. And then, you know, obviously you see a run on receivers, and Xavier Leggett goes in the first round as well. So good for Ricky. I think Ricky absolutely took advantage of the offseason and the Senior Bowl and the combine and really dominated those and showed what he was. Ricky Pearsall's a great receiver. I mean, he's a really good route runner. We all know about his hands. He's a guy that you wakes up out of bed thinking about football. So the 49ers got a good receiver in Ricky Pearsall. I said this to someone the other day. I think we look back in 8 years and Ricky Pearsall still has a successful NFL career. Does that mean a Pro Bowl guy? I don't know. But a successful receiver, I think, is what Ricky Pearsall will be.
All right, well, let's talk about this coming year's receivers, because there were some freshmen, a collection, like four of them from last year, and one of them separated. But whether you want to talk about the returning now rising sophomores, I guess, or transfers or newcomers, however you want to start, go through the receivers, because that's one of those positions we got used to seeing Florida populate the NFL, and it's just not such a regular thing anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to look at the two guys. It's Eugene Wilson, Trey Wilson, and then it's Chimere DK from Wisconsin that transferred in. And, you know, he obviously has that connection with Graham Mertz from being out there at Wisconsin with Graham. After that, it's kind of a okay, who's going to step up? You know, Marcus Burke had a good spring. We always talk about Marcus Burke. Can he be consistent? Billy Napier said multiple times, Marcus Burke can be a really good SEC receiver if he can put one game and two games together instead of having one game where he's really good and three games where he's really bad. That's a big key. Khalil Jackson's the guy, you know, we all know Khalil can play. Can he be that guy? Then you have those two freshmen in Tank Hawkins and C.J. Abrams that I think had really, you know, good high school careers, didn't do much in the spring. Can they really step up? And another guy is Andy Jean. You know, we always talked about Andy Jean last year as a freshman who we thought would play, was battled by hamstring injuries, had another hamstring injury this spring, and that hurt him as well. So, you know, Florida's looking for a receiver in the transfer portal for a reason, and that's because outside of those first two, it's a lot of, okay, can he do this? Can he be a guy?
It was back a couple Saturdays now, but your recollection, your evaluation, I guess, of DJ in the spring game, we all saw Graham Mertz, and with another year experience, and he and Billy Napier and same page and all that stuff, I think I know what that's going to be. As long as he's healthy, he's going to have a really good season, I believe. Tell me about DJ and what you see for him.
Yeah, you know, I think DJ's going through the learning curve of understanding that, you know, those throws he got away with in high school of threading the needle and, you know, the DBs not breaking on it as fast. He's going through that learning curve a little bit. He had a couple of interceptions in the spring game, one where he just missed a guy that came open on a route that he was supposed to run, and he threw to another guy. And that was kind of the tell of tales all through spring and the couple of scrimmages that they had as well. He had a couple of interceptions. But all in all, I think DJ showed what DJ can be, and that's a really good quarterback. obviously we didn't get to see him run in the spring game as they have those black non-contact jerseys on, but he's thrown some really good balls, was really accurate when he threw it, put it right where he needed to be, and had the right read for the most part there. Again, can he react and understand that the defense is a little bit faster? That's going to be a learning curve, but DJ's not going to have to do that this year. He's going to have a limited role behind Graham Mertz, and DJ's going to be fine long term. DJ Lagway is a very, very good quarterback.
Up front, and I said as long as Graham Mertz is healthy, I mean, my gosh, that season he had last year, basically no incompletions or turnovers. All right, that works for me. But they got to block better, and that's part of him staying healthy. They bring in the huge kid, the number one ranked interior O-lineman who's transferring from USC after one semester. Talk about the portal efforts and the ability to improve up front.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's a big key. You lose Kingsley, who was your starting center, and obviously he didn't play a lot last year as he was out. And Jake Slaughter played there, and they need to get better there. They need to get healthy with Austin Barber. He was their left tackle for a majority of the season, and they need him to get healthy. He had off-season shoulder surgery to repair a labrum injury that he had most of the year last year. They need him to be healthy. He's a guy that is a staple at one of those tackle spots. Maybe it's right tackle this year, but he's a staple at tackle. They need him to be healthy there. They need Slaughter to be better there. You know, they're obviously going to rely on Devin Manuel from Arkansas to provide some depth there. They're going to rely on Bryce Lovett, one of the freshmen. He had a really, really good spring. He's a guy that can play any of the interior guys, and they like him a lot and think that he has a, you know, bright future. They need him to step up. They really need Cam Waits, who Billy Napier brought from Louisiana, to step up as well. It's a lot of guys that need to step up. There's some talent there for sure. They just need guys to step up and be consistent there, and they really need to find another tackle that they can go out and protect. They can't go through another year of having Damian George at right tackle where he's just basically a turnstile where he lets guys go off that right tackle spot.
Yeah, he had just, I mean, a tough, tough season with some of the penalties and other things. And, and he has bounced around as well a little bit positionally. Flip it around to defense. I mean, I've talked a lot about if Shamar comes back and the young secondary isn't young, I was like, all right, those are two pretty good places to start. But talk about any of the three levels of the defense and transfers and what the idea is there.
Yeah, I mean, I think Florida did a really good job of going out and getting some defensive backs to kind of help them a little bit. The Bridges kid from Oregon, I thought was a really good pickup for them. DJ Douglas, the Tulane transfer that was once at Alabama, he had a really, really good spring as well. Asa Turner, the DB, the fifth-year senior from Washington, he had a great spring as well, had an interception in the spring game. Those three guys right there I think are going to help solidify that secondary. The secondary has players. I mean, Jason Marshall can be a good player. Agreed. He's just up and down and hasn't shown he can be consistent. Jordan Castillo, a safety, is going to be a good player. He was young last year as a freshman and made freshman mistakes at safety. That's going to improve this year, you hope, as he has experience now. But having those three veterans back there that can really solidify and kind of calm things down, I think is going to be a big help. You talked about it at linebacker with Shamar. That's a big one as well. Miles Graham's the guy that, you know, Florida thinks that he's going to play a lot next year. Had the back injury in high school that he had surgery on this spring. He'll be ready to go. He's supposed to be cleared for workouts next week once he gets back and is able to go through it. I think he's a guy that's probably a starter next year. On the defensive line, that they need guys that can go get the passer. And it was very good to see that the five-star L.J. McCray, that was an early enrollee, he had a great spring and was really good off the edge there. So I like seeing that. Kelby Collins moved inside and had a good spring inside. But it's a lot of what ifs on that defensive line of who can go get it. There's a lot of guys that should be able to, but can they go get it? And we'll only see in the fall.
All right, last thing before I let you go, friend, and wrapping up again, Andrew Spivey from Gator Country. Relationships and pipelines and, you know, territories, quote, controlled or owned by different, you know, football programs. You know, Valdosta, that's a Georgia program. Where is Billy Napier in the Florida program with some of the big in-state places that, you know, everybody wants to go to IMG and St. Thomas Aquinas and all that, but, you know, some of those other programs that have always kind of had a connection to the Florida program, because he's got no choice. He needs, this is not a recruit and groom and red shirt and let him work out, and then in 2 years, that's not where he is right now. Where's the relationship with the in-state football powers?
Yeah, it's getting better. It definitely is. It was awful with Dan Mullen. I mean, guys would say that, you know, they never seen Florida, and when they came up, they didn't feel welcome. Surprise, surprise with Dan Mullen. But it's changed with Billy Napier and his staff, and it's gotten better. The Jacksonville area has been a lot more friendly to Florida under Billy Napier, and that was an area that, you know, when Florida was going well in Urban Meyer's days and things, that was a Gator-friendly area. I mean, Tim Tebow, those guys all came from that Jacksonville area. Orlando, with that I include the Lakeland area. We all know about the Lakeland group that came and won a national championship or two national championships at Florida. That's starting to improve there. And the Tampa area, Billy Napier is finally getting some inroads in that Tampa area. He went and got Trey Wilson last year out of that area, and he's doing well this year in that area. Those three areas, in my opinion, are the three biggest areas that Billy Napier had to improve, and so far he's seen that. He's still losing guys. You know, Jacksonville's still sending kids to Georgia every year. Orlando's still sending kids to Georgia and Alabama every year. But it is improving to the fact that now Florida is in contention with just about every kid that are in that area that they're after, and they're able to get those kids on campus a lot. Now it's all about, you know, showing that Billy Napier is going to be the coach next year. And I think that's the biggest hurdle that this staff has got to overcome this year, is everyone hears the noise around the program that if Billy Napier doesn't win, could he be out this year? And kids just don't, you know, they're not buying into it right now. They're not okay with coming into a program that's unstable, and they're all in a wait and see approach. And for Billy Napier, that sucks, because it shouldn't be that away, but it is that away.
And last question, you can just give me a quick answer if you want to, but it's along the lines of what you said, because I agree. I was like, Billy Napier is a good, decent guy. He just hasn't won enough. So let's like separate the two. But, and so that's why last Thursday I said, an SEC coach who really didn't need a crap Thursday, he had a little bit of a crap Thursday. That was the Jaden Rashada thing. Like, just don't transfer there. I said that was a little bit of a bop on the nose for a guy who didn't need it. Or did that not even register? What's your opinion? I thought that was a little bit of a you got to be kidding me thing. Or is Billy Napier just facing the other way and doesn't care?
I think Billy Napier definitely sees it. I think that in a way, it kind of helped Billy Napier with the fan base. You know, from my you know, knowledge and seeing things on our message boards and things, people are like, okay, Billy Napier dodged a bullet. You know, the kid's already went from Miami to Florida to Arizona State. Now he's going to Georgia. You know, is this kid ever going to play? And maybe Billy Napier, you know, dodged a bullet when the NIL went up in flames. And so I don't think Billy Napier needed it from a national standpoint, as we all see it. And, you know, God forbid Jaden Rashada goes to Georgia and has a really good career. That would be really bad for Billy Napier. But for the, I guess, short term, for his sake with the fan base is actually okay with it. They see that Jaden Rashada may not be a stable player and willing to work, I guess, as much as he wants to tell people. And I don't know. I don't know the whole situation of what happened at Arizona State. I do know what happened at Florida, and that was just a bad situation for both parties. I think Jaden Rashada's a good quarterback. I think he could be very successful at Georgia. For Billy Napier, he has to kind of hope that he dodged the bullet and that Ryan Montgomery, you know, gets into Georgia next year and beats him out, and Jaden Rashada doesn't win a Heisman at Georgia.
So glad I asked that question. What an interesting perspective. I appreciate it, Andrew. Because you're right. From outside the program, it was like, oh, come on. Billy didn't need that. and if it actually helped him with the fan base in that sort of roundabout way, good stuff. I appreciate the insight, brother. Thank you so much, Andrew. We'll catch up with you soon, man.
Absolutely, buddy. Take care. Thank you.
Andrew Spivey, Gator Country. So the take – now here's the – because last week when it happened, we talked about Jaden Rashada. And the insight was from him, look, this is a reboot for me. all this other stuff. I've been led astray by the adults in the room. The adults are more responsible for this than the kids. The kids are kind of acting like they're supposed to. So he said, he presented it as this is a total reboot for me. It's interesting that at least there is a degree of response from some Florida fans. And I want to say that, like, Bama fans are crazy. Look what they did to my trees. No, like one guy drove over there. That the response from some Florida fans seems to be, no. The kid's a goofball. Kid's a flake. We didn't want him anyway. And it is that Billy dodged a bullet. It wasn't that Billy was onto it and sniffed it out. It was Billy dodged a bullet. So through dumb luck or lack of funds, somehow we didn't wind up with this flaky kid who he may bounce again. So there's that about Jaden Rashad, I suppose. I took it a totally different way last week when it happened, but I'm also not really invested in, one program's outcome as far as Jaden Rashada goes. All right, we take a break. My gosh, look at the clock. We got to wrap up next.
The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
It's going to be the little things with Dylan, not the big things, right? He's got a great feel for the game. He's got a big-time arm. He's calm. It's going to be the little things. It's going to be protecting the football, taking three, managing the game. I thought it just felt like he did a lot of those things, but he hasn't done all of them. He's grown as the spring's gone on.
Dylan Rayl, he does the big things. He is the big thing. He's the 6'3½", like 220-pound, five-star thing. That's Matt Rhule. He's the Nebraska head coach. And had them a spring game over the weekend. And early enrollee, freshman Dylan Rayola, who spent like 4 months in Buford, Georgia, playing for a team called the Wolves, and was going to go to Georgia, and then's like, Dylan's going to Lincoln instead. It's where his uncle is the offensive line coach, I think. And so, and dad and Nebraska and money, and so I can go in and probably start because they're not good and they haven't been. So maybe. Well, they do have sort of a returning starter. They only won a few games last year, but this other guy started all of them. They also have, now this is interesting, a kid named Daniel Kalen. He's not as interesting as Nebraska getting a five-star quarterback, but Daniel Kalen is the first in-state Nebraska high school football player to become an Elite 11 finalist. And now he's at Nebraska as well. So Rhule had talked also about he's just unusual. And this is part of, pro, I guess, bloodlines and experience and being around the dinner table and the breakfast table and in the car on vacation, like all of this stuff with a pro. He understands the game at an advanced level. But it's the ability to keep his eyes downfield when there's all kinds of stuff going on, especially your quarters. But here's you want a key secret for quarterbacks? Key? They hate stuff happening down around their feet. Do not like stuff happening down there. Be able to keep your eyes down. You know who did that? Like Johnny Manziel, of all the things, he was just a magician back there. Keeping his eyes downfield while he ran figure eights. I think that's the number one thing Johnny Manziel did that made him great. Dylan Rayola does that pretty well, except he's this big, giant kid with a rocket on his shoulder. What's up, Heath?
Do you by any chance, Chuck, see the comments from Evan Stewart, the transfer wide receiver from Texas A&M out at Oregon?
No, I can only imagine.
He was pretty blunt about things. I said when he came out of high school that he didn't go to Oregon because he just didn't think he could feel about moving far away from home back then, so it just wasn't really for him. They says, quote, after being at A&M and being close to home and stuff, seeing my parents, all my family, it was more like in order to grow, you've got to take it a little bit out of the box. Okay, well, so far so good. Then we get to, I just wanted to be in a great program that had order and structure. I got here and everything is in order. Honestly, everything is so much better here. I love it here. that'll leave a mark about everything is better here. A great program that had order and structure, Chuck. You know, on the list of things you hear transfer kids talk about, order and structure is not normally on the list, but apparently, at least in Evan Stewart's mind, the experience there with Dan Lanning, quite a bit different than the Jimbo days.
I needed a thumb on me, guys, and finally, I found a coach who'll put one there. Nick Saban, he would always say it without, like, go right up the line of saying it. Kids gravitate towards order and structure and discipline and uniform. They really, really do. From 18 to 22, when they've got the hard part figured out, I run a 4.5 and I'm 260 and I blow up quarterbacks. I've got that part figured out. Somewhere in the deep recesses, that's what I promise you. So good for him finding it. Too bad for Jimbo. That wasn't earlier. All right, wraps it up on this day. Me, David Heath, y'all. I'll back this time tomorrow.
This morning in the Atlanta airport, no one's missing a meal on Mac Wilburn's watch. With 11 restaurants to serve passengers, he's got dining for every destination. And it all started when Mac talked with First Horizon Bank about opening a franchise in the airport. Now it's open for business and cleared for takeoff. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Mac. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Marketing is everywhere. From the billboards on the highways to the notifications on your phone, we are constantly bombarded with people trying to sell us stuff. What makes good marketing? Are you doing enough in your life personally and professionally to market yourself? You have questions, and the Marketing Mad Men have answers. Search the Marketing Mad Men on Google or your favorite podcast provider to get practical marketing advice from expert guests who are shaping and reshaping the business world. They say marketing is a madman's game. Join the Marketing Mad Men every Saturday at 4 p.m. to find out why.
The Fan is ready for Braves season. Are you? 3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.